Welcome to another journey, UFOs, aliens, history, and the mystery of the human being. So I changed the name. Instead of UFO UAP sightings report, it is now another journey, UFOs, aliens, history, and the mystery. But just another journey is enough, is what I'll be calling it. I added that other stuff just to assist with search results. So
the name's changed, but the logo is not changed yet. Neither is any of my other things, like Twitter is going to stay the same. It's at UFO UAP sighting. My email I'll probably change, but for now it's the same, UFO UAP sightings daily at gmail.com. And I don't get a lot of emails from people, so I don't think that's a big deal, changing the email. And the website, it'll still be ufo.fish, and then I might do a second website for all the other stuff. So there you have it. I guess I wanted to... I've already explained, but in case you hadn't heard before, the reason for the name change is I want to talk about other things. I want to talk about other topics, and being UFO UAP Sightings Report as the name, that kind of limits me, and I just, want to get a broader scope of topics to talk about. I love talking UFOs, and I still will talk UFOs at least once a week, or if I don't do an episode, let's say for a couple weeks or something, for whatever reason, it'll be every other one. For example, I'll do one on UFOs and the next one will be on something else, and the following one will be on UFOs, or maybe I'll do several in a row on UFOs. But UFOs is and always will be my primary focus. I just love UFOs. I love talking UFOs. I wish I had more sightings, but I don't have a lot. So that's where you come in, and everybody who listens, and everybody out there on UFO Twitter, and just in general on the internet. There's a lot of good UFO footage out there. So I will continue on with the journey of UFOs, along with another journey of other stuff. For example, tonight I will be reading Chapter 2 of the Adam and Eve story by Chan Thomas. But first, I will get into UFOs. So it'll be a little bit longer episode, and the chapter is a little bit longer than Chapter 1. The second chapter, just so you know. And the second chapter, I think, is titled Great Floods or Great Flood or something like that. So when I read it, yeah, you'll know. But it's about floods, flood, the past ones, historically. And, his interpretation from, he got a lot of his information, Chan Thomas, translating Naga glyphs, it's like hieroglyphs, I guess, but they're called Naga glyphs. I think the Naga was like an Indian language, I believe, not Native American Indian, but like from India, Indian, I believe, apparently, I think the Ten Commandments were wrote on Naga glyphs, or in Naga glyphs, or something like that. I don't put that as fact, because I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure that's what I read, is that Ten Commandments, or Moses, he translated to Hebrew from Naga glyphs, the Ten Commandments, or something like that. I don't have the information in front of me. I apologize for that. Where it comes from. And so that it came from translating that and the book of Genesis and just the Bible in general, some of the books I think out of there. He translated them more properly, I guess that's how to say it. Like, I think they were originally translated literally, which in from, I guess, from that language to Hebrew, literally can change certain terms. And you learn that in hieroglyphs too. Certain things can be translated several different ways, and if you don't understand how it's written, like, for example, sending a text message, well, there's no tone in a text message, so, you know, you can say something like, I'll be right there, and then somebody can take it either as, I'll be right there, or somebody can say, I'll be right there, you know, it's just there's no tone to it, so you don't quite get the meaning, unless, of course, you know the person, and they know you, and they in the conversation, and all that, and you know, it's just how it is, and how it was, and how it will probably be, you know, forever. You know, that language will be misinterpreted. So, and this is just his interpretation, Chan Thomas. And so, but he did it scientifically. He did a lot of research. He spent a lot of time, 20 years on the book. So, and that, just that, shows you that he probably, at least somewhat accurate, pretty accurate for spending that much amount of time on that book. And I think it's just the first book he spent 20 years on. I'm not sure if he spent that much amount of time. I know he didn't spend that much amount of time on the follow-up Aftermath. Or maybe it was 20 years on both of them. I'm not sure. But and he also wrote some other books. And he was like a professor in college. And he taught ESP, extrasensory perception, which is, you know, like psychic abilities or mentalist abilities type thing. So yeah, so he's, you know, he's been around and he did a lot. I mean, he's passed away now, but he did do a lot. And I personally think this book should be taken literally. It's very important that we understand the meaning behind it, and we need to prepare for it too, for what could potentially be coming. But we'll get into that when I talk about the book. For now, in just a moment, I will be talking UFOs. There are some sightings I saw that I want to talk about, so I'll be right back with your sightings. All right, so this first sighting I have for you comes off of YouTube, and it's the one I wanted to talk about a little bit that I talked about in the intro. It is from MAVI 777 UFO Alarm. That's the name of the channel on YouTube. MAVI 777 UFO Alarm. Title of the video, Something Strange Has Appeared in Donetsk, Ukraine, an Incredible UFO Sighting in Korea. So they have, I think there's a total of 4 sightings on this video here. And so in the title, the Ukraine one, just because it's in the title, so you might want to hear about it. I don't think it's very good. It shows a lot of sparks in the air, like a lot of lights in the air. And so because of the war or battle going on over there, ongoing war, it's probably has something to do with that or related to that. It looks like sparks coming down from the sky is what it looks like. almost like fireworks, but not quite, but a lot more of them. So I think it just, it has something to do, war related, not UFO related, myself personally. And then the Korea one, which I believe is the second video on here. They recorded it above, some buildings, and it's during the daylight, and there's two lights, and then there's almost like a reflection or some kind of third light in the middle. It's kind of weird looking, and it's cloudy and foggy, and I don't think that one's very good either. The quality's bad. It could be something, but I don't think it is. I think it's either cloudy or foggy, and it's a building or something that, or a road maybe even, that something, you know, it looks, makes, made to look like a UFO, but it's not. But that's just personally. But the next one, the third one, is the one I really wanted to talk about. So I only talked about those two because they were in the title. But the third one is real interesting to me, and I'll tell you why. So it, the thing about this video is, so there's a guy and he's talking on the video and he says, where did it go? And he says, where did this go? Where did it go? Oh, it disappeared. And then he goes, and then all of a sudden a light kind of appears and he goes, oh, there it is. There it is. It's back. And it's at night. It's in the sky. I think it's in Phoenix is where it occurred. So in the United States, and it, the thing about it is it disappears again and then reappears again. And it almost, first time it looks like a light kind of turning on and then disappearing again, but then it splits and it turns into several and starts moving around. And it's just lights in the sky kind of doing this on and off and doing these weird motions, unusual, like definitely not plane. I doubt a plane would look like this. I guess it could be a drone, but this happened to me. And that's why I wanted to talk about it, because a couple of times I've looked up in the night sky and a light would turn on, it seemed, or a light that was on would turn off in the sky. And if I didn't know better, I would have thought the light was either a star or some celestial object. But I would have never thought it was a UFO, except for the fact that the light turned on and off. And this happened to me twice. Once was about a week ago, and once was a couple months ago. It was right after I started this podcast was the first time it happened. And then not too long ago, it happened again. And so that's why I wanted to talk about this. And it's not the same where, because this one, it shows this object's moving around and doing moves in the sky. And it's very UFO-like. For me, it was stationary in the sky. And I'd look up and there would be a light and it would turn off. And then I'd look up again. And I'm walking my dog, so, you know, there'd be a minute or two in between walks after I finished, you know, after I closed my mouth, you know, because my jaw went agape, and like, you know, I went, oh my goodness, you know, and then after staring for a while and saying, oh, well, I guess it's nothing. And then walking, and then I'd look up again and it would happen again. And I don't know. It's just really strange. I don't know what that is or what that means. I just know that it happened to me. And it's similar to what happened to this guy where he's filming and he's like, where did it go? And then all of a sudden, it's almost like a light turns on in the sky. But for him, it moves around. For me, it was just in the sky, just kind of staying there. So like I said, I don't know. There's also a fourth one on this video as well. And it's not very good either. I think it's probably just a planet that they're filming on the fourth one. But I put a link to this on my website, ufo.fish. So if you want to check it out, have at it. Yeah. So this next one I have is real interesting. I got it off of UFO Twitter. Nikki Noel 7, or just Nikki Noel, NIKKINOELLE 7. I retweeted it, hashtag UFOXYZ1234. So you can search that hashtag or for Nikki Noel or just UFO Twitter. You may be able to find it that way also. But it's real interesting. So she titles, My Phone Freaks Out When Filming Certain Anomalies. And she's recording something in the sky, right? Like a jet or something in the sky. And then all of a sudden this, I don't know what it is, some kind of light appears, like an arc of a light appears on the screen. And when it does this, her phone just like vibrates insanely, like an earthquake or something, just real bad, just shaking like I've never seen a phone shake before. It's real interesting. She puts out stuff once in a while, yeah, so this is really interesting. I just wanted to talk about it for a minute. I've never seen something like this. I don't know if you have or if you might know what this is or what's causing this. Like I said, an arc of light goes across the screen and then her phone just starts vibrating just crazily. And it doesn't look like any special effects or any CGI or anything like that have been added. However, I'm not an expert, and I don't. When I see her stuff out there, it doesn't seem to me like she's the type of person to do that. I think she's legitimate. You know, she's experienced a lot of stuff before, and so I think this is just something that happens to her. I didn't. And she, you know, like if you go to her main page, she says that she is an experiencer. So she has, experienced, and she's been interviewed before as well. So, and she puts up UFO videos once in a while, and more than once in a while, probably daily, or at least weekly, where she has something happen that happens to her. So she's an interesting person just to see out there. I'm glad I found her, or she found me. I'm glad and this one's just real interesting. It's weird. It's just vibrating. Just like, I don't know if it's her phone. Somebody met, put in the comments that it's we call it like jammed or jamming, some kind of like I guess in like radar phone jamming. I don't know. I mean, maybe it is. Maybe it's some kind of like aircraft or something that's, or some kind of government thing that does that to phones when they don't want people to record, be recording or see something, you know, get some evidence of something. I don't know. It's just, I'm just replying on a comment that somebody left. And it's highly unusual. So if you want to check it out, just go to my Twitter page. I retweeted it, or you can go hashtag at UFOXYZ1234 and you'll find it there pretty easily that way. All right, so before I read the book, chapter two of the Adam and Eve story, I'm going to talk about one other thing. Elon Musk on Twitter. So his tweet he put out, I believe yesterday, says, "Given that Twitter serves as the de facto public town square, failing to adhere to free speech principles fundamentally undermines democracy. What should be done?" And it's a poll he did. And the he says, "Free speech is essential to functioning democracy. Do you believe Twitter do you believe Twitter rigorously adheres to this principle? Yes or no?" And the majority of people put no, they don't. And I agree, they don't. They you can just, they, Twitter lets you if regarding politics anyway, it's what their politics are. It doesn't allow people to express themselves politically. And I believe that's also religiously, that a lot of they've done that too. And then Elon Musk puts, "The consequences of this poll will be important. Please vote carefully." So he's hinting at something. And you know, people are speculating that he's going to buy it, or he should buy it, Twitter. And I think, I don't know what the value is now, but I know he can afford it. I think last I checked, which has been a while, maybe a year or so, it was $15 billion. So for someone like him, he can definitely afford that. You know. And I know Elon Musk, he's always put out there that he's a free speech absolutionist. So he is very, very, free speech is very important to him. And I think it's very important, period. I do. I agree with him on that. And I do agree that Twitter does not, you know, they just let people tweet as long as it doesn't affect their personal beliefs. And they use, you know, they'll use reasoning like, you know, they're just trying to prevent violence or whatever, violent acts or hurt against people. But it doesn't, it's very unbalanced, because people who don't, who agree with Twitter politically, Twitter lets them get away with a lot more than the people who disagree with it. I'll put it like that. So, yeah, I don't know what Elon's planning. I don't know if he's going to buy Twitter or buy a majority in Twitter to, you know, get a bunch of votes on their board. Or I don't know what his plan is, or if he's going to start his own social network type thing where, you know, he lets people say what's on their mind. So who knows, you know, there's only speculation right now, so you can't really, say what he's going to do, but I just think that, people need to know this, that, he's concerned, I guess, about free speech and Twitter and how Twitter has been changing, or has been like this for a long time, you know, for years. They've been that way. So, but, you know, and then again, Elon Musk, he He also, I guess he also put a, he's thinking, he okay, so I'm scrolling through and I just see this. Is a new platform needed? He asks, and then he says he's given serious thought to this. So maybe he is thinking about, I think that's what he's saying, he's given serious thought to. There's a couple of different tweets, but one of them is a new platform needed, and then another one is I'm giving serious thoughts to this. So, and they're both one right after the other, pretty much. I mean, one's a little ways after another, but so who knows? Who knows? We can only speculate, but I just thought you should know that. All right, I'll be right back with chapter 2. So, I apologize for doing it this way, reading the book. If you're wanting it to hear it in order, you're going to have to, you know, skip through this episode to get to it. I guess I just thought of this. I've already recorded tonight, so I'm not going to redo it. But I just thought, you know, maybe I should do it. So there's just a episode for chapters itself, and then do separate ones on that same day for the book. So I think I'll do it that way from now on. But for now, here we go with chapter 2 of the Adam and Eve story. Chapter is titled The Great Floods. Noah, Adam and Eve, Vishnu, Osiris? What do they have in common? They represent eras ages apart, and yet, somehow, they all join hands in the next cataclysm and walk with us. There are others who walk with us, too. Men of science, long forgotten. Those who first saw that these tumbles, these cataclysmic catastrophes, or revolutions, of the Earth's shell have happened before. Countless times, J. André Deluc in 1779 and Georges Cuvier in 1812 were the foremost. Dolomieu, the famous mineralogist, joined the consensus, as did Escher and Forel, the Swiss geologists, also J. André Deluc Jr. and von Buch. They all agreed that the cataclysms were caused by sudden revolutions in the wrong direction by the surface of the Earth. Cuvier, in his Theory of Earth, first published in 1812, based his conclusions on unparalleled correlative research in stratigraphy, comparative anatomy, and paleontology. As a matter of fact, Cuvier was the founder of the science of comparative anatomy, based on his pioneering self-taught work in that field. At that time, he wrote, "Every part of the earth, every hemisphere, every continent exhibits the same phenomenon. There has, therefore, been a succession of variations in the economy of organic nature. The various catastrophes which have disturbed the strata have given rise to numerous shiftings of this continental basin. It is of much importance to mark that these repeated eruptions and retreats of the sea have neither been slow nor gradual. On the contrary, most of the catastrophes which occasioned them have been sudden. And this is especially easy to be proved with regard to the last of these catastrophes. I agree, therefore, with M.M. Deluc and Dolomieu in thinking that if anything in geology be established, it is that the surface of our globe has undergone a great and sudden revolution, the date of which cannot be much earlier than 5,000 or 6,000 years ago. Also, one preceding revolution at least had put the continents underwater, perhaps two or three eruptions of the sea. These alterations now appear to me to form the problem in geology that it is of foremost importance to solve. In order to solve it satisfactorily, it would be necessary to discover the cause of these events. These ideas have haunted, I may almost say have tormented me during my researches among fossil bones, researches which embrace but a very small part of those phenomena of the age preceding the last general revolution of the globe, and which yet intimately connected with all the others. Many attempts have been made to answer the charge made to the geological profession by Cuvier to explain these sudden revolutions in the wrong direction. Among others, Velikovsky tried it through his studies of myths and legends. Hapgood tried it, Hugh Brown attempted, and in the process amassed a tremendous library of geological data. Every time the cataclysmic concept has risen, the beast has been stoned, burned at the stake, beaten to a pulp, and buried with a vengeance. But the corpse won't stay dead. Each time it raises the lid of its coffin and says in sepulchral tones, "You will die before I." The latest of the challengers is Professor Frank C. Hibben, who in his book, The Lost Americans, said, "This was no ordinary extinction of a vague geological period which fizzled to an uncertain end. This death was catastrophic and all-inclusive. What caused the death of 40 million animals? The corpus delicti in this mystery may be found almost anywhere. Their bones lie bleaching in the sands of Florida and in the gravels of New Jersey. They weather out of the dry terraces of Texas and protrude from the sticky ooze of the tar pits off Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles. The bodies of the victims are everywhere. We find literally thousands together, young and old, foal with dam, calf with cow. The muck pits of Alaska are filled with evidence of universal death, a picture of quick extinction. Any argument as to the cause must apply to North America, Siberia, and Europe as well. Mammoth and bison were torn and twisted as though by a cosmic hand in a godly rage. In many places, the Alaskan muck blanket is packed with animal bones and debris in trainload lots. Mammoth, mastodon, bison, horses, wolves, bears, and lions. A faunal population in the middle of some cataclysmic catastrophe was suddenly frozen in a grim charade. Supernatural winds, volcanic burning, inundation and burial in muck, preservation by deep freeze of both torn up animals and muck. Any good solution to a consuming mystery must answer all of the facts, challenges Hibben. The challenge wouldn't leave me alone. Like a hunger, it gnawed at my subconscious. I could hear the deep tones of Cuvier's challenge. Find the cause of these events. Still reverberating through the sacred halls of science, ghostly, unanswered, I felt Hibben's challenge prodding. Answer all of the facts. I decided that this cataclysmic concept, this catastrophic end, which visits our planet time after time, needed verification or refutation once and for all. The first step was to gather all of the known accepted data from as many sciences pertaining to our planet as possible. Stratigraphy, archaeology, radiology, anthropology, paleontology, and oceanography, plus cosmology and astronomy, and seismology and oceanography, and paleolanguages such as prehistoric Mayan, even evolution could not be ignored. Further, cross-correlation of the data between the sciences had to be honored. All of the foregoing gave the answer. Although there is enough data in most sciences to indicate that these cataclysms happen, there was not enough in each science to derive the process or prove the concept. But between science, cross-correlation showed indeed that the concept was true. Not only did it verify that the events have happened, but disclosed when the last five cataclysms were and what positions the shelf of the Earth has been in for the last 35,000 or more years. This was a first-time effort for certain. So after years of research beginning in 1949, Cuvier's challenge had an answer. Yes, indeed, cataclysms do happen, but I had not yet found the answer to his challenge. Find the cause of these events. It would take me 20 more years to find the cause and the trigger of cataclysms. What makes them start? And further, exactly what is it that happens after it starts? What is the process of a cataclysm? Finally, what is the timetable of a cataclysm? It was obvious already from the data that it was non-linear. Was it a mathematical function that we could derive from the data? Or is it random and frustrating in its unpredictability? The more learned, the more to be discovered and learned. Meanwhile, what a chase, and what a dramatic story of the Earth's history we uncovered. Civilizations of more than 20,000 years ago, more advanced than our wildest imagination. Prehistoric legends from Greece, Egypt, India, and South America, which became history instead of legend. Lost continents in the Atlantic and Pacific, which became dated realities with logical reasons for their sudden disappearance. Yes, Vishnu came alive, a man who lived through a cataclysm many thousands of years ago, actually 10 cataclysms ago. Now he is as the Hindu god of 10 resurrections from the waters. Osiris was rediscovered. He was the Jesus of his time, a man of Egypt some 15,000 years ago. Noah smiled at us from the pages of the Epic of Gilgamesh. He actually was a Sumerian named Utnapishtim, who lived just around 7,000 years ago. The ark he built is more than legend. The process of a cataclysm is known now. Look at the cross-section of the Earth inside the front cover. You'll see two molten layers. The yellow ones, the important one, is the thin molten layer starting 60 miles down, extending 60 miles deeper to 120 miles below the surface of the Earth. The thick, deep molten layer starting 1,800 miles down at the bottom of the mantle and extending 1,300 miles deeper is the outer core. Seismology has proven these two yellow layers to be molten, and they are white hot, over 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit. The outer 60-mile thick layer is the one which supplies the volcanoes with the molten lava they spew forth. Inside the Earth, the electrical and magnetic structure of the interior makes these layers act as if they were near solid or plastic. As long as the interior magnetic and electrical structure of the Earth maintains its orderliness, this old Earth keeps on rotating on its axis in a normal manner. If anyone doubts that Antarctica's ice cap is growing, it has been proven that it is growing at the rate of a Lake Ontario per year. So is Greenland growing. Since they are not centered on Earth's axis of rotation, they develop centrifugal forces coupling with each other in a direction perpendicular to the Earth's axis. It's like swinging a bucket of water around yourself on a rope. The water stays in the bucket. If you did not have the restraining rope, bucket and water would fly away. In the case of the ice caps, the restraining rope is gravity, which keeps these two ice caps landlocked. Since these ice caps therefore cannot fly away, they resolve their problem by trying to pull the entire shell of the Earth above the 60-mile thick molten layer around the interior of the Earth. As long as the electrical and magnetic structure is maintained inside the Earth, the ice caps cannot pull the shell around to let them to go to the equator, and we maintain our orderly, daily, monthly, yearly rotation. Right now, we don't know why. Every few thousand years on a varying timetable, the magnetic and electrical orderliness in the shallow molten layer is disorganized. Further, it is not known by what means it is disrupted. It has to be a way which lowers those energies to the extent that the shallow molten layer is allowed to act as a free liquid, letting the molten layer act as a molten liquid, which then serves as a lubricant for the ice caps to pull the shell around the Earth's interior so as to have the ice caps shift about 90 degrees into the torrid zone. In 1/4 to 1/2 a day, the geographic poles move to the torrid zone, and all hell lets loose. The atmosphere and the Earth's oceans and lakes don't shift with the shell. They just keep on rotating west to east. And at the equator, that speed is about 1,037 miles per hour. It has to be, normally, to make one revolution per day. So, while the shell shifts with the poles going to the equator, the winds and oceans continue eastward, blowing and flooding across the Earth at supersonic speeds, inundating continents with water miles deep, destroying everything with which man ever dealt, including himself. That's a summary of the process. Now, what about the trigger? This turned out to be the most elusive piece of the whole puzzle. We couldn't rely on some supernatural assumption, like some sometime happenings in the heavens of a vague character which actually violated the laws of nature. No. It had to be something natural, part of nature's ordinary structure, which disrupts the Earth's inner electrical and magnetic structure whenever a cataclysm happens. It also has to be a kind of happening which decreases the inner electrical and magnetic forces to the extent that they cannot support keeping the shallow molten layer acting as if it were plastic or near solid. We once thought that severe sunspots could be the cause, because they do disrupt the Earth's inner electrical and magnetic structure, but we were wrong. The time wasted on that assumption was the price for dealing in assumptions rather than facts. It was a bad detour to take. What was necessary was to be patient, to take more time, to assemble more facts, and use our most valuable tool, analytical reasoning. The solution, whatever it might be, would come. The derivation of the process gave us a greater understanding of prehistoric events. For instance, you can see that ice ages are not a matter of advancing and retreating ice. It's simply that different areas of the Earth are in polar regions at different times, for different durations of time. Changes between positions take place in a fraction of a day, and the accompanying supersonic deluges deposit the various huge stratas we find in the walls of the Grand Canyon, Painted Desert, Monument Valley, the mountains around Mexican Hat, Canyon de Shelly, and the Moquai Dugway. Story around the world gives silent testimony. The Berisca mammoth frozen in mud with buttercups in its mouth. The age of the gorges below Niagara Falls and St. Anthony Falls about 7,000 years. The sudden end of the Laurentian Basin ice cap in Canada about 11,500 years ago. the uninterrupted evolution of the Galapagos over 11,000 years, the geological datings in Murrumbidgee River Basin system in Australia, showing the end of an ice cap there about 11,500 years ago, the age of fossil bones taken from the Wilshire Boulevard tar pits over 11,000 years, the sudden end of all work in the prehistoric city of Tiahuanaco, Bolivia, 11,500 years ago, Leonard Woolley's great work in the Holy Land, dating Noah's flood about 6,000 years ago, the end of the Wisconsin ice cap about 29,000 years ago, the sudden 200-foot rise of oceans all over the world about 7,000 years ago, the sudden rise of the St. Lawrence Riverbed 7,000 years ago, the changing levels of shoreline of the Hudson Bay in Canada, the huge granite blocks from the Alps sitting on the eastern slopes of the Jura Mountains at 4,000 feet above sea level, the great legendarian Fraser's uncovering of over 8,000 verified separate inundation survival legends in the Malay Peninsula region, the Pajark Marsh in Australia, which shows a quick extinction of many, many species, including humans, 11,500 years ago, the Piri Reis map, showing the North Pole in Egypt, the Egyptian water clock, showing agreement with the Piri Reis map, granite on top of the mountains around Death Valley, California, the great stratifications of the Grand Canyon, Painted Desert, Monument Valley, and Badlands, each layer homogeneous, showing it to be deposited there suddenly by fantastic amounts of super swift water, the present growth of the Antarctic ice cap, approximately 293 cubic miles of ice per year, the legends from primitive man in Tierra del Fuego at the southern tip of South America, of the day the sun set in the wrong direction, the legends from primitive man of Peru, the day the sun stood still, the legends from Malayan and Sumatran tribal aborigines of the long night, the Varve earth strata counts in Renshaw, Minnesota, and Hackensack, New Jersey, which conform with each other, the prevalence of jade in the Orient, which is material heaved up from the mantle near equatorial pivot points during a cataclysm, the fantastic evidence of burgeoning tropical plants in Arctic, Siberia, Alaska, and Antarctica, frozen and preserved for thousands of years in a fraction of a day during a cataclysm, the similarity of languages the world over, from Polynesian to Greek to Egyptian to Mayan to Eskimo to Yakut to Oriental and more, the footprints of dinosaurs imprinted in beds of exposed river mud, frozen before the prints could deteriorate, remaining frozen for thousands of years to allow the mud prints to ossify for us to see as dinosaur footprints in rock beds today, the correlation of ice ages, stone ages, and quick extinctions of all species the world over, the survival of primitive life at the equatorial pivot points, the last two being the Malay Peninsula and the Galapagos, both now rife with lizards, the existence of a coral reef on the floor of the Arctic Ocean, and more and more and more and more, give us a prehistoric picture of the positions of the Earth's shell during the past 35,000 years. The overwhelming evidence, when put in order, gives a dramatic picture of which areas have been at the North Pole, when they moved to the pole, when they moved away from the pole, and how long they were there. The chart is on the next page. Notice that the end of an era is the same as the start of the next era. Although the chart is in terms of years ago and years duration, do remember that the change from one era to the next occurs in a fraction of a day, short enough to be called abrupt. Areas at the North Pole, North Polar Areas. Arctic Ocean and start years ago, end and duration. So Arctic Ocean starts 7,000 years ago. End question mark, duration question mark. Sudan Basin 11,500 years ago start, end 7,000 years ago, duration 4,500 years. Hudson Bay 18,500 years ago started, ended 11,500 years ago, duration 7,000 years. Caspian Sea 29,000 years ago start, 18,500 years ago end, 10,500 years duration. Wisconsin ended 29,000 years ago. Yes, Noah, Adam and Eve, Osiris, Taora, Zeus, and Vishnu have much deeper meaning now. And as they join hands and walk with us, we hear Adam and Eve saying, "Listen, for now we can truly share our story with you." So, and that's end of chapter 2. So yeah, very interesting. He has all the data, she gives you the evidence, and he lets you know how he researched it, gives you all those statistics from all around the world, times, very connected, you know, a lot of things happened either 7,000 years ago or 11,500 years ago, for the most part, or 29,000 years ago, so there's been at least three. He also you know, talks about different things like the day the sun stood still and all of that. And I've heard about that in legends. So there's just a lot of interesting stuff in that chapter. A lot of good numbers to go by. A lot of, kind of giving you proof and evidence of what he's found and how he knows and how he researched it. And I put a link to the book on Twitter as well, and as well as in the description of the this podcast. And so if you want to find it, you can do that, and look up if you want to look at the charts or read it again, or read it instead of hearing me to talk about it, hearing me read it, or if you want to read more, read on. And then there's pictures also of the Earth's core, but I'm sure you can find that probably on just a random Google search of the Earth's core. Not a random, but type in Earth's core and you can probably find the numbers there too if you're want to take a deeper dive into that. All right, well, that'll do it for tonight. Thank you for listening. I'll be back soon with the chapter 3. Chapter 3 is titled The Story. So, The Story, Enigma, Pursuit, Unraveling. That's the title of the chapter. So, yeah, so look forward to that. You have a great evening. Thank you for listening. All right, so just a quick announcement. My stepson, YBC Wax Gaming, he just made an announcement that he's going to be posting a new video on his YouTube channel every Friday. So once a week, he'll be posting a new gaming video. He is very entertaining, very funny. It's YBC, your boy Chance. So YBC Wax, WAX Gaming. And you can find his channel on YouTube. So please check him out if you're into gaming and or if you're into funny. Either way, or both, you'll get a kick out of his channel. Thanks.